Maybe we should talk specifics.
Let's do.
Okay. Yesterday, we had a meeting about planets.
Well, to be fair, Jimothy. To be fair, Jimothy, that sounds weird. Are you okay with being called Jim?
I am.
All right. Hi, everybody. This is Eugenie Bondurant. I play Tigress in The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Boy, that was a sloppy intro this week, wasn't it? It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSaintPete.com. My name is William Koontz. Very nice to be back with you this week. Wow, just sloppy all the way around. This is not spelling out well for this week's show. You got to start strong. And I'm not doing that this week. I went to go get a coffee next door from the Black Crow Coffee Shop, which I do enjoy very much, but they run out of cold brew a lot. And they always say the same thing. The nice lady or man or gender non-specific person behind the counter always says, "I'm sorry, we don't have cold brew right now, but I can make you an iced Americano." And I always go, "Nah, no thanks." And then usually go get a Monster Energy drink or something. But this week, I took him up on that. The guy was very convincing, or lady, or gender non-specific person was very convincing this week. And I said, all right, I'll try it. And I think I like it. So you should try new things, is basically the moral of this story. You might like it. It's not good. I'm not going to say I like it because it tastes good. It tastes like dirt it tastes like mud. This is what it tastes like. It tastes like dirt with water added into it, which is mud. And you're drinking mud without the grit in it. But you don't drink coffee for the taste. I guess some people do, ladies do. They'll put like cream and chocolate and all this other stuff, cinnamon that doesn't belong in peppermint, whatever, into their coffee. But I don't do that, and I don't think most men do either. But yeah, just drink your coffee black, right? You don't drink it for the put milk in it or anything. That's weird. I mean, it's extra steps, too. You just want to get to the coffee. You want to get to your energy. That's what you're drinking it for. Same thing with booze, right? Like, you know, men don't really drink, like, shots, right? I mean, you're just drinking, like, if I get a shot at the bar, you just get a shot of whiskey or something. You just kind of sip on it. My friend gave me a guff about that the other day, too. He was making fun of me, and I'm like, I'm not drinking shots anymore. That's not what I do. And when I did pound shots, they were like Jaeger bombs or raspberry gelato with a smidge of some liqueur in it. You know, like, I'm not slamming shots anymore. Those days are done. You get a nice shot of Jameson or Maker's, and you sip on it while you sip your beer. So, I mean, coffee is the same principle, I think, pretty much. I know some people are, like, obsessed with coffee, but they're weirdos, generally. But yeah, coffee is just for the energy itself. And, same thing with booze, same thing. So, the Americano, iced Americano, not too bad. Mud water, it's, doing the trick, even though it didn't start the show off, quick. But, you know, we're starting a new light as of today. We're turning over a new leaf, and, we're going to get the show done this week. This is the Homemade Broadcast. Thank you for tuning in. This week on the program, we have John Suarez. He is a visual artist here in town. I follow him on Instagram, and he does these cool, like, 3D renderings. He paints, and now he's doing this computer stuff, too. So I want to find out what the heck that's about, what that is, because I'm kind of out of the scene a little bit as far as the art scene goes. I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to talk to John here very shortly. But first, I want to say thank you very much to our sponsor of this program. We are entirely supported, meaning Radio St. Pete is not paying me to do this, believe it or not, this excellent program. So, so thank you to these people because they're keeping me afloat, keeping me supplied with whiskey and mud water that I need to survive and thrive in this environment. So thank you very much to Tap House 61, my good buddy Joe, and the all-new Tap House 61, formerly Sly Bar No More. Now it is called Tap House 61. It's got a new look. It's got a new feel. It's got the same great neighborhood feel to it. And it's all pretty inside now. So go check it out. Get yourself a beer. Tell them that I sent you. And go to taphouse61.com. And same thing with the Facebook. Just facebook.com/taphouse61. The number 61.com. Yeah. Facebook. facebook.com/taphouse61. Boy, I tell you, out of it today. Man. And also, thank you very much to Truvy Salon and Spa. Christy Parker doing all sorts of things over at her salon. Botox. You can get your Botox on if you need that. And you can always just get the old reliable haircuts and spa treatments and stuff like that. She does a great job. She cuts my hair. And I don't let anybody touch my hair besides Christy Parker, the official hair cutter of the HMB Radio Network. Make sure you visit her at Truvy, T-R-U-V as in Victor, Y, salonandspa.com. And make your appointment today. You can make it right online. Go check her out. And finally, my friend Christine and K9Holistics.com. K, the number 9, Holistics.com. She deals with dogs. I know. It's crazy to think that, you know, with that name, what else would she be doing? But she is a dog trainer, and she will get your dog to stop acting like a jerk in a nice, holistic way. She doesn't do it like the rest of them do. She's very hands-on. And she will mold your animal into this pleasant little puppy package that you'll be able to take to bars, and it will not embarrass you, okay? She knows what she's doing. So visit her at K9Holistics, K, the number 9, holistics.com. Free consultation. If you have a little monster at home that needs some training, make sure you give her a shout. Thank you very much to those people. I love you, and I like you more than a friend. So, yeah, John Swor is coming up here shortly. Make sure you keep up with us. Subscribe at HMB Radio Tampa Bay on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. It should show up there. Subscribe. Give us a rating while you're there. It really, really helps us out. Only takes a second, and we'll be very eternally grateful. I got stickers, too. The Homemade Broadcast at RadioSaintPete.com. Email me. Send me your address, and I'll put some in the mail for free for you. So, yeah, okay, can't beat that deal, pretty much. Facebook.com/HMB Radio and HMBRadio.com. You can contact us. Give me a call or text 813-693-2124, HMBRadio.com. There's a contact section. Be able to find all that goodies. Follow me on Twitter, home_made_man, and follow Radio St. Pete while you're there. Radio St. Pete, Radio STPETE. Same on Twitter, same on Instagram, same all the way around. All right, John Suarez, visual artist here in St. Petersburg, coming up this week on The Homemade Broadcast. John.
Hello.
That's the abrupt start. I just like to jump right into it. How you doing, man?
Good. How you doing?
So I found you on, I think I found you on Instagram.
Yeah.
And started following you, and then kind of, you know, keeping up with you that way. And then one day, we did the Hollander Poolside Comedy Jam.
Yeah, Lauren Hubbard's birthday.
Yes.
She had all those great comedians. Uh-huh, I was doing some live art there.
Yeah. Oh, you were?
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the day, I guess, the pool party, for the pool party?
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of I brought some pieces, a piece to sell, and then I was posted up doing some art. I think I sold that piece. And then, yeah, by the time you got there, I was just hanging out, listening to the comedy and all that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then I was like, oh, I saw you posted on your story, and I was like, I was there. I think I'm sitting right next to you from this angle. And then I didn't even know it was you, so then I was like, oh, hey, man, I was wanting to meet you. I'm following
I noticed you, and I kind of, I was like, that looks familiar. I think he's a Homemade Broadcast guy, but I was like, that's a weird way to kind of introduce yourself. Like, I've seen you online, you know.
Yes, yeah. That's my worst nightmare even still, and I've actually had it happen to me where you say, hey, man, how's it going? And then they're like, what? I went to school with this guy, Andrew. He was kind of like, you ever have a friend in school that's not really your buddy, but in that class, he's your boy, you know? So it was kind of like that with me. We never really hung out too often outside of class or anything, but in that class, we were homies. And I saw him like 2 years after graduation, and he was with a girl, and I was like, hey, Andrew, what's up, man? How's it going? And he just looked at me like, who are you?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's Will from computer class. And he went, I don't know what you're talking about. And I went, oh, okay. And yeah. Then I was really embarrassed. And that was my worst nightmare yep. come true.
And that's the worst thing. Like, I've had that happen. Like, people show up, and they're like, oh, I've seen your arm. I'm like, yeah, you.
Of
hey,
course.
Yeah,
it's going, Chief.
How's it going?
Sure.
Buddy.
Yeah, it is a nightmare. But I'm glad to meet you finally in person here. Have you been keeping up with the mayoral debates or anything?
The what?
The mayoral debates, the election that's coming up. Are you a political guy at all?
Not really.
Good.
Stay working.
I'm only paying attention because I host the city's podcast too, the City Hall broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of interested in what's going on. Let's listen to some fringe candidate tell the Uhurus to go back to Africa. Did you hear about this? This is crazy. Paul, Uncle Paul, I call him Uncle Paul Kanjemi,
mm-hmm.
And he's a nut. Let's check it out.
You talk about reparations. The reparations that you talk about, Mr. Neville, your people already got your reparations. Your reparations came in the form of a man named Barack Obama. My advice to you, if you don't like it here in America, planes leave every hour from Tampa Airport.
This is the good part.
Go back to Africa. Come back.
Side of the Ricks.
So that happened last night, and I don't know if you're keeping, like, you're not keeping track, but the last one, poor Joe from Radio St. Pete, like my the president of Radio St. Pete, he went down there to cover it, and they had to call the police in because it was just a madhouse. And then this happened last night. This Paul guy wasn't at the first one, but the first one was so action-packed that I wanted to listen to this one. And I'm glad I did because it was very entertaining.
So he's local St. Pete or local Florida?
He's local St. Pete. He's a lunatic. He's ran for mayor, I think, the past 3 times, and I think he's gotten combined 20 votes in each election. But they're kind of making it seem like he's a racist because of this.
And which, that's the thing. It's because... Because we are in Florida. We're like deep south. We're lucky we live in St. Pete. It's
yeah.
progressive, like even
right.
Sarasota, Tampa. You know, we're surrounded by, you know, good progressive states. But we still are Florida deep south. Like, you don't have to go that far, like a couple of hours
right.
to get into, you know, deep south where that
yeah.
kind of stuff
would
sell.
I was thinking about it because context is important. And the words that he uses are important, too. Because I feel like something like that, it's so easy to jump on this guy for being a racist or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's not saying, what he's saying was, if you don't like America, which I don't know if you know about the Uhurus, I don't really, they're like communists. They're weird communist dudes who want reparations and all this
mm-hmm.
stuff. So if you don't like it, then why don't you go, because they're big Africa promoters.
Yeah.
They promote Africa. So I was thinking just the context of it. I don't think it was really that bad.
Yeah.
But they're making it out like it is a huge deal.
Well,
I figured they would, just because it's a hot topic.
It's just a mess. So.
It is, but it was funny. I got a big kick out of it, just laughing about it. Old crazy Uncle Paul, lunatic. So yeah, that happened last
yeah.
night. But anyways, yeah, I was kind of hoping you were a political guy or something. We could talk about it. But so tell me about your art, man. I know you're doing, obviously doing the painting, but then you're doing this computer generated
stuff.
Yeah,
I try to keep with a bunch of stuff. I keep active locally, always doing art shows, a lot of local venues. You know, 548 supports us. I got art at Elven Witch, local spots, Furnish Me Vintage, all that. So I always stay making new art, you know, to put out there. And then there's always the murals, because, as you know, St. Pete has
tons of
giant
them.
Mural
yeah.
scene.
They're becoming known for, that's like their main export at
mm-hmm.
this point.
So I don't focus 100% on murals, but a lot of my friends, you know, Zulu, Thirst, they're always, you know, every week, you know, they're out there looking for murals.
Somewhere new to paint.
So, if I get a chance to help them out or jump in, I'll jump in too. Or even if I get an opportunity myself, you know, that too. And then the digital stuff that you see, that's more, because I went to school at Ringling, graduated all that, moved to New York, as, you know, started work as like a professional illustrator. Big city was too much. Came back, found St. Pete, loved the art community. And so a lot of the digital stuff you see, all that, it's me just keeping on with the fine art education, you know, always updating my portfolio, like keeping up with like the new technologies and stuff like that, like more, not local, but just keeping competitive with like other artists.
Right, you know? See what's on the cutting edge. It takes a special kind of person to kind of do both, I think. Like, like graphic designers have to do that. You have to studio classes, and then you move into the illustration. Like, I was in graphic design at USF, mm-hmm. and I loved the studio portion. That was awesome. But then once the computers came along, I was out. I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep up with that. So it's a special mind where you can kind of garner both.
It's crazy because it's the tools are always evolving. Like graphic design is a good one. Graphic design, I respect it a lot because graphic design, they follow the rules. Like composition, color theory, all that. Like they know it to like...
Yeah, it's not like, really up for debate. There are certain rules of what it looks
like. You got to make it look good. You got to make it look perfect because these are the rules for graphic design. And like you can break them, but you got to be at the top level.
Right.
You know, but then everything else, like the new tools, staying cutting edge, it's like the 3D stuff I do. It's kind of rough to keep up to date with it because I do 3D modeling on this program called ZBrush. And I had just spent like 2-3 months just like giving myself a refresher course, you know, relearning it, you know, getting real in deep, like stuff that I didn't know before. And then I think a couple of weeks ago, they just released like a new update where it's not a whole new program, but they basically fixed a bunch of the stuff I taught myself, like how to do, how to work around. And it's like, so you got to
Find that with not only in art, but like regular programs you use you'll download the new software or whatever, new version, and it's completely different. And it's like, how the hell do I use it? You had to teach yourself how to use it again.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And so you would think the learning curve would kind of be that they would be on top of that, but no, the engineers just kind of do what they want.
But that's where the education comes in, because the good thing is, like with graphic design, photography, illustration, drawing, the rules are the same. It's composition, it's color theory, all that. If you know that, you can take a good photo, you can make good graphic design, you can make a drawing, and then everything else, it's extra once you got that foundation, you know.
Right, and there's only really a few rules for that. I mean, and then once you have those, you kind of off on your own. You're either good at it or you're not, pretty much. So once I got to the computer portion, I dipped. I couldn't do it.
Computer, oh my God, it's too much.
what's your degree in?
Degree in illustration.
And is most of that, when I think of illustration, you kind of think drawing cartoons or something like that, but it's probably a lot more than that.
Illustration, the way they taught us, it's a lot of our teachers in Ringling, they were teaching us how to illustrate for like books, newspaper articles, like if there's a music record or something and someone gives you this assignment, it's like, all right, this is this story, it's horror, it's this and this, how can you, you know, illustrate the themes and the idea in like one picture?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
was that literally when you're drawing stuff, or was that on the computer, or a mix of both?
That would be like the assignments, you know, and then that's the thing, for every assignment, let's say if I was designing an illustration for a book, you know, from there it was your decision. It's like, do I want to do this digital? Or would it look better as a painting? Would it look better as this? So it's like creative problem solving. But the thing that's kind of messed up is that's not really a job anymore. Like you open up a magazine, you don't see a hand-drawn illustration.
Right,
a photo, CD cover. You don't see like someone didn't paint, you know, the CD cover. They, you know, took a photo. They took all this stuff. So I love my degree, you know, I learned a lot, but they taught me a lot of stuff that's not really relevant to the stuff we do now. That's why I stick to that's why I do gallery stuff, murals, 3D, I do all around. I took what they taught me and then from there just kind of, you know, fit it to the world.
Is there such a thing as half and half, where you kind of draw something and then put it into the computer and finish it in the computer, or vice versa?
Oh yeah, for sure.
You do that a lot, or?
I don't. I kind of keep it separate because the digital stuff, I like it because digital work, if you make it on the computer, you can make it as big as you want. You can change it, change the colors, you know. Those are perfect for prints, for putting online, putting a bunch of different versions, all that. And it's a whole different feel. It's, you know, it's something that gets spread out online. But then, you know, a painting, like if I take a picture of a painting and say I make it like a 4x4 feet, or like let's say a mural, you know, that feeling when you're looking at it, like when you're looking at a big painting or a big mural, you can't recreate that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take a picture of it and get that same feeling. So that's where I kind of keep the separation. Like if I'm doing something as a painting, I want you to get that full feel as a painting. There's no point in taking that and, you know, fixing it up digitally, because it's, you're going to lose stuff. And then
yeah.
Same thing, the digital piece, if you take it out from being digital and then, you know, take that digital piece and then just make it on a wall or something, again, you're taken away from your liberty of like making like a digital piece. So it's, I keep it separate. You can definitely mix it. I've mixed it before. Like I've taken, you know, the 3D stuff, for example. I'll make a 3D model and use that as reference a little bit. Like if I'm having trouble with a painting, you know, bust
out. You can
out
put it in a computer
little,
and get a good look
yeah,
at it,
bust
360
out like,
degrees.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Is there, I feel like there's, and maybe I'm just ignorant on this, but I feel like there's something missing from the actual art of a real painting, because everything is digital now. And even when I was in school, this was, geez, 6-7 years ago now, but people were getting tablets. And mm-hmm. now I bet you it's even more common where people are drawing in tablets and
oh,
using
yeah.
the tablets. It just feels like, I understand it's basically the same thing, but it just feels like working with that solid material is part of the art. Like having to use that medium and shape it and move it the right way, as opposed to in the tablet where you can kind of erase it and, you know.
I like to call it, I know it's not, but at least the way I say to myself, it's cheating. It's because I have my little tablet and I'll start out a painting. And the thing is, one, the main thing of having that Control-Z, that undo button, which is, I mean, if you've done digital stuff, your hand is there hovering
yeah.
on that Control-Z. Like you mess up and it's like, doop, mm-hmm. not even like a
gone.
Second thought. It's
right.
gone. And it's that's a big cheat that, like, especially me when I'm painting, like if I mess up, I don't mess up in a painting. It's just
it becomes
something
part of the painting.
I didn't plan for. It's
and you
like,
got to work your way around it.
That's
right.
there. Either you got to, you know, work on it, put on top of it. But there's no Control-Z. And then that's the same thing. It's like, so digital, it's at least for me, I think of it on easy mode because I got that Control-Z. Or if I'm painting and if I'm unsure about something, I'll put another layer on it mm-hmm. and then start painting on the new layer. But then I can, you know, hide that layer and then see what I had before underneath. And see if that new layer on top, that's totally cheating. You can't do that with a painting. Like, there's so many paintings that I do that they have hundreds of layers on it because I'll start it and then change my mind and then put another layer on top and then change my mind and then, you know, keep going on it. And if I had that option to go back down, you know, 20 layers to this step, it's a completely different piece. And it's, you can't do that on a computer. Like, unless you have this complete self-discipline of just, like, working on one layer, not touching Control-Z. Nobody works like that. I mean, maybe some people work like that. But
they don't. I care, there's no way you couldn't use that tool if it's right in front
yeah.
of you. But then it's almost like with painting, too, when you make a mistake, and then if you didn't intend to do it, and you're like, yeah, I'll just kind of fudge my way around
but
this. Is that cheating, too? If you mess up, is that a form of cheating?
Personally, when I mess up in painting, that's when I learn the most. Like, that's when the part I love the most is, like, finishing a piece. And then, like, have some part that I completely messed up on that's, like, not how I wanted. And then I'll have someone tell me, like, oh, I really like that part, how you put that color in there. It just looks so, you know, it's so new. And sometimes I'll tell them, you know, oh, actually, that's where I messed up. Like, that's, I didn't mean for that to happen. But other times I'll be like, yeah, yeah, I was trying to do this. It's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
I nailed it.
Yeah, but it's, you can't have that. You can't have mistakes. In
yeah,
digital, you
right.
can. And it's like, and that's the thing of painting. It's, you know, you want the mistakes, you know. The best paintings I've done, it's like, where I don't even have an idea. It's just throwing paint on it, and it's, all right, this looks like something. Let me see what else I can make it look like.
Yeah.
And then just keep on messing up, and just, it's a challenge. It's a game.
Absolutely.
Digital, it's easy.
A little bit easier, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there's such a thing as fine digital art? Is there? I mean, it seems like that wouldn't be a thing.
I'm sure there is. I don't know. Because it's the thing is, I've seen fine art, digital artists, and they just get so clean. They just, every layer is so perfect, and every light comes out good, and it's like, it becomes not generic, but you can see kind of overall, like, this cleanliness. It's like, every digital piece it has is kind of like, just looks new, looks too clean.
I guess if you come up with something innovative, but I mean, so I guess the people who determine what fine art is curators and gallery owners that decide to put it out there.
Yeah.
Because I mean, even like in the 80s with the Beautiful Losers and all those were, that's not fine art, but now it's considered fine art. And that kind of opened the door to pretty much everything in between now. Yeah. Anything can be art. My friend sent me some sculpture of just beers and ice, and that was in a museum. And that was just like, it's a tampon in a teacup type of thing, where like you can look at art as anything now. And exploring that and taking studio classes and having to write an artist statement, mm-hmm. and you're forced to write this thing that I didn't believe. I just kind of made it up because I had to. Mm-hmm. So then I'm like, I think art is the biggest hustle of all time.
It is. It's half and half. That's why I like St. Pete the most, because there is that curated side that, you know, the fine art galleries, I mean, you've seen them over, like, on Beach Drive, or, like, the tourist districts, that they just sell, like, the palm trees and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's a curator. That's a business. They have a gallery, and their job is to sell art to their collectors. And they know what their collectors want. They know how much money their collectors are going to spend. So they're putting their name on the line when they're putting out this stuff. Like, so what you said, like the sculpture of the beers and
all
that.
The beer and the
pool. You might not think of it as art, but that curator, he probably knew the artist, knew his history, whatever. But then also, I guarantee he had some buyers, some big name buyers that had a lot of money to spend, and he knew that he could get them to buy this. So it's a business transaction. It's not really that much about the art. It's about the curators, you know, his reputation, and he wants to make this deal, and he wants to fucking put all this work. But here, I like that you can make, because especially, you can put an art show anywhere in St. Pete. You know, you can have it on the side of the road, you can have it in a bar, you can have it in a restaurant. And there, I like it, because the only curator is the person that's buying the art.
Yeah.
You know, if someone sees it, and they like it, and they want to buy it, that's a direct transaction. It's buyer meets the artist, buys the art, and then the artist knows, people like this, I'm going to make more of this. And it takes away that middleman, which is, it's not that it's unnecessary, but it's...
It is. Well, this is a DIY town. Everybody's doing it themselves, which I really like. I don't know what it is about this area, and maybe it is just because I live here. I think it's only in this mm-hmm. area. It might be happening all over the country or all over the world. And it probably is with the invention of the internet.
It is not at the level of here.
Of here. There is something special going on here. No
There's
doubt.
An indie market going on like every day of the week.
Yeah. 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 That's great.
Other places, they have one indie market, you know, this second Saturday. No, it's here. You got the Pinellas Indie Market. You got this weekend indie market. You got the one on Tuesday. You got and you couldn't have that if you didn't have so many people creating. And you couldn't have that if you didn't have all these people supporting and buying. And, you know, they want this.
Yeah.
And it removes the middleman, because the people putting on these markets, putting all that, they're not the curators. They're not in charge of anything. They're not choosing what sells or not. It's the people that go, the artists creating it. And that's the purest part.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. John Suarez, visual artist, is on the Homemade broadcast this week. Are curators that are on Beach Drive and, you know, on Central Avenue, are they doing anything for local artists as far as getting them in the galleries?
There are some. I know there are. I don't want to name names, because I avoid them, because with the bigger curators, the bigger businesses, you know, and they're paying more rent, they take a bigger cut. Mm-hmm. Some of these places, you know, you'll look in the windows and you'll see a nice piece of glass, a nice painting, and you'll see it selling for like $2,000, $3,000, and you'll be like, that's so overpriced. Like, that's crazy.
Right.
But the thing is, once you look into the behind the scenes, is that gallery, some of them, they take up to 70% of the cut.
Right.
You know, they take 50% of the cut. So even if it's a $2,000 piece, the artist is only making $1,000. And then on top of that, you got to think, how much does that place have to pay rent to stay open? So they have their own separate, you know, headaches. And then also they have the people that go shopping there. They have their clientele. They have this whole image they have to keep track of. So they'll, it's a bunch of stuff. So I know that they do try and help as much as they can, but also, you know, they gotta cover their own expenses, their own reputation, all that. So it's a tricky thing. And it's complicated, you know?
Yeah, I think it's even gonna get more so as this place becomes cooler and rent goes higher. It's even gonna get worse and worse. But the stuff I see, I don't wanna be, I mean, I guess some people appreciate it, but the stuff I see in the bigger galleries, it's not really my cup of tea.
It's because it's safe. It's, I know exactly what you're talking about, like the dolphins, the celebrities, the you know, random, what do you call it, contemporary art, the blocks.
It's a little kitsch. It's just...
It's kitsch.
There's nothing going on. It's
but
just
it's because they know that, because a lot of the... Because another thing, it's we live in Florida, and a lot of the people with money in Florida are the retirees. It's, you know, the old people money. They don't want the young artists doing, like, you know, tattoo-based art, illustration, comic-based art, or just, like, you know, the crazy art that we do in this city. They don't understand that. They don't react to that. They won't buy it, you know, especially people with money. They're not, they don't understand that. But then you show them, you know, something that looks like fine art, something that's a palm tree, makes them feel nice because it's nice colors, or, you know, a celebrity they love, and it's made in this great talent and all that. That's all they need. That's all they want to see. Something that they can connect to, something that they know is made well, and something that, you know, it's going to be worth some money.
I feel like it's art for people who don't really
collect
art. They just have this extra income. And then people who are into art don't have the money to buy art.
Yeah. They want to buy art, but, you know, they want to buy art in, like, the general sense, you know. They don't want to, you know, spend...
They want something to hang in their bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Artists, too, it's like spending money on an artist. It's a tricky thing. It's an investment, you know? Especially if you see a young artist in St. Pete, and you see his art on a wall, and it's selling for kind of expensive, but then you as a buyer, you don't know, you know, if this artist has any education. You don't know if, you know, this good piece is just a fluke. You don't know if he's gonna still keep on working and growing and actually get a career where this piece of art that you spend money on is gonna be worth money, or maybe, you know, this was just a fun little weekend project and he put it up on the wall, and then you got this, you know, piece of art you spend money on that's, you know, just forgotten because, you know,
do you think that's why people buy it as an investment? I never really thought that was a unless it's like those things that are at Christie's or something where it's like, this is a Basquiat, it's worth $100 million, and then some weirdo buys it.
It's half and half, because I like talking to my buyers, you know, and like buyers in general, see why they buy things. And there is a couple. There's, you know, in St. Pete you have a lot of the people which is the pure buyers, that they just buy stuff that they like, you know, they just want something nice to hang, they want to support local artists, they don't care about the rest. They're just like, I like this, and I want to give you money because this makes me feel good, and buying this makes me feel good, and it's done. You know, and that's perfect, you know. But then there are the other ones that they go to, like, more of the gallery shows. You know, they follow the artists, because there are artists to follow in St. Pete that they've been working on their career, and their career obviously has a trajectory that's going to lead them out of St. Pete. And you have these art, like, buyers that they want to spend, you know, $500 on a Chad Mize piece, Aurelius piece, or like Brooklyn Seabass, whatever, one of my pieces, because they believe that, you know, we're going to keep on going, and that this piece of art that they spent a good chunk of money on, it's not only an investment, but like their kind of support in our journey. You know, I'm putting in money so that you can get to that place you want, so that this
piece...
So
it's like a mutual, mutually
beneficial.
Yeah, it's
a mutual thing, because honestly, it's like the same... I think of it the same way as with the local bands. It's like you follow a local band and, you know, see them in your little dive bars, buy their little $10 CDs and, like, their shirts, because you like them and you want them to grow.
Right.
But also, you want to be the one that when you hear them on that radio, you can be like, oh, man, I was with them at this dive bar in, like, 91, and I got one of their first T-shirts. I was there. You're a poser, you know? That's what everyone wants, you know? They want to be part of the story.
Yeah,
and sure. If you're here in St. Pete and you're buying art from, like, local artists, you're obviously going to be part of the story. You're going to be one of the, you know, I got this original from, like, back when they were doing. That's what they want to have. Like, they want to be part of it.
That's a good point. I never really thought of it that way. I remember I saw, speaking of bands, I saw Benjamin, you know, Benjamin Booker is?
Mm-hmm.
I saw him at the friggin' shuffleboard shed, in the shed, and then 6 months later he was on tour with Jack White.
Yeah.
That was crazy. And I still, I like that story. It gives me something to tell. It's a
good tale. Wants that story. And, you know, and that's one of the biggest things you can give is somebody, like, be like, they can be part of your journey.
Yeah.
You know?
John Suarez is on the Homemade broadcast this week. Is St. Pete kind of like a stopping ground then? Meaning, is it going to be like a commuter for, is it like the double, I don't know if you're familiar with baseball terms, but like there's single A, double A, triple A, and then you make it to the majors. Is this kind of like a double A team, and then you're going to move up somewhere?
I'm definitely trying, well, that's a good thing about St. Pete. It's at a really good spot. Because Miami is, I guess, what you would call that, like, AAA town or whatever, because, you know, Miami.
I don't know. They're pretty big, man. I was just there.
Miami, if you make it down there for, like, Basel, or, like, if you get noticed in Miami, automatically you're open to the world now. Because if you have a name in Miami, you can use that for, like, New York. California. Then you have, if you have New York, California, Miami, then you can go spread out international, do all this different stuff. But the good thing about St. Pete already has a good name in Florida. Like, if you tell somebody in Miami, it's like, oh, I'm a St. Pete artist, they'll know, like, they'll get that understanding. But what I like most about St. Pete, I call it, it's like a prototype town. It's like, it's the best place that you can kind of try out different ideas. You know, whatever you want, and then just toss it out there. And if people react to it, people buy it, people run with it, then you know you have something good. You have basically this whole town, this whole audience that they're watching. They look at the art, like they react to it. Like if they don't like somebody, I mean, if they don't like the art, you know, you'll know because it won't get sold. It won't get, you know.
Right.
Or someone will tell you, be like, yo, I like your other stuff better. Like, this stuff is kind of bad. And it's like, you don't find that a lot, you know. You find that rarely, like, even online, even anywhere. So it's a perfect place to get, at least for me, the way I think of it is, you know, get my work to a point where, you know, I've tried out this, you know,
narrow down
and just, like, clean it up so then I can take it somewhere else and have it, you know, already be fully formed instead of be experimenting somewhere where, you know, you don't want to be experimenting with your work in Miami.
You got to be the big fish in the small pond, and then you move your way up. That makes sense. And is it the same just like anything else? If you're an actor or a comedian, it's either New York or L.A. type of thing?
I'm not sure. I mean, for comedians, I've only been starting seeing the comedian scene. And it does look like I respect the comedians a lot because I met them at the L
at her birthday. Yeah.
And they're doing the same things we're doing. They're refining their material in, you know, St. Pete, Tampa, you know, and just really refining it, getting to this final product. But yeah, their end goal, I'm assuming, is, you know, Miami, New York, that other bigger jobs. But the thing is, you can't show up at those places with, you know, half-baked material. You can't show up with, like,
you know,
this is night.
You can. You won't do well out there if you do. I mean, those people that moved to L.A., a buddy of mine, a good friend of mine, moved to L.A. and was back within 6 months. And he's—I think he's very funny, and he's you know, put in the legwork. But there is a lot of big fishes out there.
That's what happened to me in New York. I went up there right after school, kind of fell into a job, and I was good. I was trained. I had my degree. I had everything. But the thing is, over there, it's not about being good. It's about the connections. It's about the money. It's about all this other stuff. It's about, you know, already having people that support your work, all that. And it's so I showed up there, a lot of talent, but I guess my stuff was still half-baked.
Yeah.
So I came back to fully bake my stuff. But, yeah, it's out there. It's because you got to think, it's everywhere is competitive. Even St. Pete is super competitive. Yeah.
But you know what I like about this is that it is very competitive, but it seems like, and even with the comedy stuff too, people are cool with each other, and they want people to succeed. Is it kind of the same with the... It seems like you guys all work together and...
Oh, yeah. Because we're all competitive, but we all support each other because we're all at that same level. We're all competing for the same kind of prize, but the prize isn't so much in St. Pete. The prize we want, it's beyond.
Right.
You know, so you can't really get mad at other people because no one else is, you know, at that level. In New York, you'll be walking on the street with, like, all these other people and, like, all these other artists, and they're killing it. They're killing it beyond levels you can even make.
But how many of those people, I mean, what's the percentage? 1% out of the total population that's actually making a living and doing well? Is it even that much?
Where?
In New York, because there's a lot of all the talent is in New York, probably. Really, I mean, if you want to be realistic about it.
From what I saw, at least from people like personally that I knew, and that graduated and like lived there, like they got good jobs and they're working well. They're not killing it. They're surviving.
Yeah,
they've got the equivalent to a desk job making art. And then they've got a nice place, but because of, you know, the cost of living up in New York, they're doing well, but comparatively, they're struggling. You don't get the full enjoyment of New York unless you're making, you know, a lot of money. Because, like, the way I felt in New York was I was surviving, but I was so broke. Like, the best thing about living in New York was being able to say I was living in New York and post pictures. But then the rest of the time, I was eating, like, ramen and, like, just, like, struggling to pay rent. Just, like, and I had a good job, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah. But I would imagine this apartment in New York would be...
Oh, my God.
$15,000 a month?
You'd have probably. Three roommates in here.
Sleeping on the floor, yeah.
And that's the thing here. It's here. You can, you know... be surviving, be thriving, be doing your own thing, and all this without, you know, sacrificing so much. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost of living, you know, the quality of life, so much better.
Well, I hope it doesn't get too out of hand because rent is going up. My rent just got raised here. It's still manageable, but it is happening. And I don't know. I get nervous. These people that made this town what it is are not going to be able to live here soon enough.
Have you heard about the people that are worried that St. Pete's going to become like the next Tampa? Just like there's too much overbuilding, just too much overselling the city as the next, you know, spot to be.
Yes.
And then the jobs aren't going to be able to keep up with it, you know, so you're going to have a lot of really nice, fancy high rises, but
who's gonna live
no people to afford it. And like, it's just going to become like a very nice ghost town.
Yeah, I often wonder that. And I was thinking, well, maybe these nice places will be cheap to live in because they're building all these luxury condos and stuff that are beautiful.
Yeah.
But who's going to live in them? And I mean, I guess I'm sure they do project planning. They you know, this is what the trend is, and this is what we're going to be able to do with this place. But even until they built that one luxury place, and people were getting penthouses for like $500,000, which is a lot of money. But it's, you know, it's the best room in the city.
There's one big story. It was a couple months ago that the city gave this big grant to this technology startup for like 300 new jobs or something.
Yeah.
They brought them all here, and they were all working. And the thing is, they had to shut down within like 3 months because just the work and then the people they brought in, they couldn't afford to live like where they put him. It didn't add up. And like the city spent, it was a ridiculous amount. It was like $30,000 or something, this grant, just to like get these people down here to get them to start up. And then the business was good. You know, the people had jobs and all that. Just the numbers didn't add up.
Yeah.
It was like the workers for the rent they were paying and for what they were getting paid. And then for how much money the business was making. Because that was the main thing, too. They were promised this, like, city where it's like, oh, man, you guys are going to make so much money. It's going to be awesome. Just, you know, post them up here. And in the end, it was like, money
just didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we need, St. Pete needs real commerce, real business here. It's all service industry. It's all restaurants and food, which is great. But I feel like that's going to be the next level.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's room for that, if there's even room for these companies. But I feel like that's the next step,
yeah.
And hopefully they'll be able to figure it out. One thing I want to ask you about before we go, with this modeling you're doing with the computers, what do you think about this 3D printing? I find it fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think is going to be the future with that in art?
Well, 3D printing, like, now they're getting so cheap that you can, I think some of the cheaper ones are 500, 300?
They're pretty affordable. Now, I went to an expo with my dad 3 years ago, maybe,
yeah.
And they were $10,000.
Yeah, no, and they're homemade, and like there's people that they'll buy a cheapo 3D printer, and then they'll 3D print their own parts to upgrade their 3D printer. Like that.
That's going to be the way of the future, man. I think it's going to be, you're going to have one of those in every house, and it's going to be filled with like proteins, and you're just going to be able to print food and stuff.
Yeah. And like the 3D stuff, I like it. It's good. I've gotten a couple of jobs here and there. Like I've actually worked for Hasbro. Back in the day, I designed like a head off of like a Star Wars toy.
Oh, cool.
I've done a couple of like good jobs here and there, but the thing is it's the reason I didn't get into it full time, the reason I don't want to get into it full time, because it turns into a cubicle job.
Yeah.
It's like, think about like, for example, I got friends that they work on like 3D movies, like the Pixar movies, all that. And it sounds amazing. You get to have your name on this movie, but then I think about them and literally they're in a 9-to-5 job behind a cubicle.
Probably
staring at a computer.
Probably 9-to-9 too. More
yeah.
Like it,
and just staring at a computer, and they're not even working on the big stuff. They're doing like detail stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard stories about all the time. Like even at Hasbro, they were telling me like, yeah, you're going to be doing this stuff. They'll send you this model. You're going to be making some barrels or like some stuff. And it's like doing grunt work for like 5 years. And it's like, you know, I became an artist to be an artist. If I wanted like a cubicle job to make money, you know, I would have become an accountant. That's that's way better money than, you know, sitting behind a desk.
Yeah.
You know, doing art, you know. It's,
I often wish I was good at math so I could just be an engineer or something, because it's a struggle. Anything in the arts, it's so hard to really make a living at. One more thing, too, before we go. What do you think the city can do, the number one thing that would really help the local art scene, really push it over the edge? I know they do a lot, but if you could pinpoint, you know, maybe something that they're lacking. If anything, I mean, maybe there's nothing.
No, actually, because the city is. They do support. They've done everything can. They put grants everywhere. You know, honestly, it's more on the artist and I think on the buyers. Actually, not even the buyers anymore, because one thing I've noticed, too, it's this city supports the artist so much. Like, the complaint I've heard of from the buyers is that they don't have any more room to put up all the art. You know, and that's a great problem to have. It's, you know, that the city supports their artists so much that the people that do buy the arts, it's not that they can't afford it. It's just they don't have space.
Yeah, and I know they're put up a bunch of ads in New York and stuff for people that are coming in as tourists, you know, getting into the Dolly Museum and saying, hey, we have this available, come check it out.
Yeah.
So they're definitely doing a lot. That's very important. John, thank you very much for coming in. Where can people find your work?
Instagram at Suarez Art. On Facebook, I'm John Suarez. Basically anywhere. Just look up Suarez Art, most of the stuff.
That's Suarez Art.
Mm-hmm.
Suarez Art. Very good. John, thank you very much, man.
Very much.